Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is John Rubino, author of several books on the economy, including The Money Bubble. He founded the website dollarcollapse.com. He's speaking to us from Port Angeles, Washington. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. Good to be back.
How is life there in the port after moving in from Idaho, I believe?
Life is good. It's a pretty place with nice weather. And I'm near Vancouver, which is a very big deal. So, yeah, so far so good.
What do the latest indicators say about the economy?
Well, it's a mixed bag right now because I would say that under the surface, most of the indicators are pointing towards a downturn that becomes a recession by year end. But here in the U.S., just this morning, we got a GDP report that was stronger than expected. 2.4% annualized growth, and that's got everybody wondering, you know, which of the indicators that are coming out should be trusted. And I would still say it's the weak ones, because you got real estate, the housing market in the U.S., because mortgage rates have gone up and home prices had previously gone up, is frozen. Most people just cannot buy a house using today's mortgage rates. So home sales in general are really weak. And then commercial real estate is just rolling over big time in a lot of places. There was just a story yesterday about what's happening in Baltimore. There's a section of Baltimore with a lot of office buildings, and some of them are starting to change hands. And they're changing hands at prices that are, 40, 50, 60% less than the last time they were sold, which means that if you can extrapolate that to other real estate markets, which I think you can to a lot of other real estate markets, we're looking at big losses that somebody has to eat in commercial real estate. Maybe it'll be the banks, and then they'll have to report bad numbers, and then people will pull their money out of those banks, and then we'll see runs on the banks and the banking crisis. Or insurance companies, or pension funds, or the holders of real estate backed bonds who aren't part of those other organizations. So there's a lot of losses to be taken, and that means slower economic growth going forward. Now, meanwhile, a lot of prices are down now. The Dow Jones Commodity Index is down by 5 or 6% year over year, which means inflation. So there's lots of things like that, and most of them point in a negative direction. So I'm still holding to my forecast of a recession by year end that potentially turns into something much worse in the following year.
The Fed raised interest rates again this week. How much higher can they go before something breaks? And wouldn't you consider the failure of three large banks as something breaking already?
Well, they broke the banking system and had to bail it out with higher interest rates, because that was the cause of the banking system crisis, was that interest rates had gone up, which is the same thing as saying bond prices went down. And a lot of local and regional banks have big bond portfolios, which they had to report losses on, and that's the thing that set off the crisis. So that's not going away. If interest rates are going to go up, that makes that problem much worse. And at the same time that it makes lots of other problems worse. For instance, the U.S. government had very low interest costs on its debt for a long time because it had forced interest rates down to unnaturally low levels. But now the rates are going back up. The U.S. is looking at $1 trillion a year in interest expense on its government bonds. And that's not the end. It's probably going to go up from there. So that's this huge drain on public financing. And it's the same thing all around the world. Everybody's interest rates are up, which means everybody's governments are suddenly much more expensive to run. And that will break something if it continues. We don't know how government finances will evolve in a higher interest rate world when there's so much debt out there. It could be that rising interest costs increase deficits, which put pressure on currency values. In other words, it changes the exchange rate of currencies in a negative way because people are looking at how much bigger deficits are now. And that raises inflation, which blows up a lot of things. So there are lots of knock-on effects to higher interest rates. And most of them are bad. A couple of them are good. For instance, retirees and savers in general now get paid more on their savings, which is a good thing and long overdue. But the borrowers of the world are suffering, and they'll continue to suffer in bigger and bigger ways until, like you said, something serious breaks. And I don't think we're far from the next domino falling. I don't know what it'll be, but it could be any number of different financial entities that can't handle higher interest rates.
2024, an election year in the U.S. Will the government artificially prop up the economy until after the election, where they don't seem to care for the first 2 years?
Yeah, that's what governments tend to do. They find ways to funnel lots of money in the direction of voters, whether it's pushing interest rates down to naturally low levels to make it easier for borrowers to borrow, or it's eliminating student loans, for instance, like what's happening in the U.S., where you just make those go away, and then people will vote for you, or any number of other things. So, yeah, governments have the ability to manipulate the electoral process in that way. Incumbent governments tend to try to liquefy the economy and stimulate as much growth as possible going into the election. So, you know, we want to do that. But right now, we're doing the opposite in the U.S. in the biggest way possible, which is interest rates. We're raising interest rates to the point where it's going to have a really adverse effect on the economy, and we're doing it in the year before a presidential election, which is which illustrates how desperate they are to do something about that 10% inflation we had last year. Because otherwise, they would never do this with this kind of timing, but they feel like they don't have a choice. So I think that all the stuff that we're talking about in the economy, the bad things that higher interest rates will bring, you can magnify that. And when you look at the political sector, where higher interest rates causing a recession and maybe some kind of a financial crisis is going to be terrible for the incumbent party. And they wouldn't do it if they weren't desperate.
I've watched enough science fiction to know what an event horizon is, but what is a trust horizon, and why should we care if it's shrinking?
Well, a trust horizon refers to our willingness to put our faith in distant entities. In other words, when things are going well and it seems like everything's being run competently and honestly, we're willing to leave money in bank accounts, for instance, or buy food that's shipped from Chile or Mexico. And we assume that whatever it says on the label is actually what's there. And we take the drugs that our doctors tell us to take because we trust the big drug companies to be, honestly trying to cure us. You know, it goes on and on. But, what's happening now is that the big systems are incredibly badly run and incredibly dishonestly run. The pandemic is a good example of that, where it turns out that 90% of what the public health authorities told people, in the U.S. at least, were lies. Meanwhile, the monetary system is being run badly, as evidenced by 10% inflation last year, which hurt the people who are already in financial straits. You know, if you... if you're barely making ends meet and your cost of living goes up by 10 or 15%, you're being badly hurt by the system. And people that used to have good unionized jobs in the U.S. saw their jobs be shipped overseas and saw themselves lose that middle class status that they had because of the experts designing free trade programs that were supposed to help everybody, but actually helped just a handful of the already rich and crushed a big part of the middle class. Anyhow, this process goes on and on. There are a million different examples of systems not working anymore and people figuring out that whatever system they're thinking about in the moment is rigged against them. So they stop trusting the big distant systems and put their trust in what they can see and touch and what people they can meet and look in the eye. So in other words, their trust horizon shrinks back to states and localities and away from nationalities and supranational organizations. When you realize that the biggest big system that has lost the faith of people is the money, then you get to the gist of why this matters for our conversation. Because if you don't trust the Federal Reserve or the Bank of Canada or whoever's managing your money anymore, you don't trust that money, because in a fiat currency system, currencies only hold value to the extent that we trust the people who are managing those currencies. So take that trust away, and all of a sudden, nobody wants to hold those currencies again. So we act accordingly. We take our dollars, and we immediately buy things like gold and silver, which are older forms of money that governments can't inflate away. Or we buy farmland or other kinds of food-producing, you know, protective real estate, things that that have value in and of themselves, regardless of what's happening in the financial system. And we sell our, you know, bank stocks and government bonds, and we use that money to buy gold and silver miners. See, all of that is happening right now. And it's a good thing for individuals, because that's what we should have been doing all along. But it's bad for these big systems, and it's very bad for these big fiat currencies. So a shrinking trust horizon means a weaker dollar, euro, yen, Canadian dollar. It means a financial crisis out there in the not too distant future. And that's the process that that we're looking at right now. And unless the guys running these big systems suddenly become honest and competent, which is highly unlikely, the process is going to continue.
How do such incompetent people gain these positions of power?
That's a good question. And I think that power perpetuates itself. A big system eventually stops being about its customers and more about its own self-perpetuation. And that's where we are now with a lot of different things. For instance, the banking industry has taken over the financial regulatory apparatus. We've got regulatory capture there. So from now on, or for the past 20 or 30 years, all of our financial policies have been designed to help the big banks and their favorite customers. So it in that kind of an environment where the system has your back and you can pretty much do anything and still survive and get even richer, competence and honesty are not rewarded. So you basically get people who just know how to do deals. You know, all these Ivy League educated guys who know what fork to use. And they've got this big Rolodex of people they're related to and that their parents know that they can call for help, but they actually don't know how to do much of anything. So when their judgment becomes what determines the fate of the system that they're working within, the system blows up. Same thing with, for instance, public health, which is the thing that most recently destroyed its own credibility. The drug regulators, the food regulators, have been captured by the big companies in those industries, and they no longer work for the people taking the pharmaceuticals. They work to enrich the people making the pharmaceuticals. And so you don't need competence in that kind of an environment. You just need to be kind of rapacious. Meanwhile, the military-industrial complex is running U.S. foreign policy, and therefore, the guys who seem to be running foreign policy, our State Department people, our Defense Department people, they can be complete morons because it doesn't matter. They're not making the decisions. The people behind the scenes are making the decisions, and they're doing a very bad job of it. So we're looking at the government spokespeople who are telling us why we should be, you know, invading Russia any minute now or fighting World War III with China. You can tell they're idiots, but they're in decision-making places that that they shouldn't be based on their own abilities, but their abilities don't matter. It's just their connections at this point. So anyhow, that's a long-winded answer to what was a short question, but, you know, it's all true. The people in charge now do not seem to know what they're doing, and or they're basically just mouthpieces for people who do have a very evil plan, and they're putting it in place right now. It's a very ugly picture that's only going to get worse from here before enough people figure this out and we start changing back to honest government and competent bureaucracies, things like that.
Well, the two most important jobs on the planet, politician and parent, don't require any education, any background checks, or diplomas or certificates. Anybody can do it.
Well, the difference being, when you're a parent, the consequences of bad decisions are very
apparent.
Close to home. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you're motivated to do a good job if you're a parent, by and large. But if you're a politician, doing a good job can have a lot of different meanings. And what it's come to mean now is serving your the people who donate to your political campaign, your contributors, not the people who vote for you. We're in a bad spot.
In British Columbia, the premier retired, John Horgan, fought the Trans-Canada pipeline tooth and nail, was against any kind of energy program at all. And then he gets out of politics, and the first thing he does is sign on with Teck, one of the biggest coal companies on the planet. So,
yeah.
Like, what does he really believe? Like, money talks louder than words, I would think.
Yeah, I think so, too. So
we see that happen with politicians all the time. They talk one way when they're in power, but once they're back into private enterprise, the big greenback does the loudest talking. In August, the BRIC countries might release a gold-backed currency. How important is that?
That's potentially a big deal. We'll see, though, because we don't have any real information. What we've got is an announcement that they're thinking about doing this thing. We don't know what the currency is going to be like. We don't know if they're actually really going to do it. We won't know till the August 22nd meeting. But it's a potentially big deal. You know, it starts, at a minimum, it starts a conversation in the world between or about the differences between fiat currencies and sound money, things that are backed by something real. And that can only be good for gold and silver, and it can only be bad for the fiat currencies. So at a minimum, things get marginally worse for fiat currencies. But if it's a legit gold-backed currency that comes out with Russia and China and a bunch of other countries behind it, then that's potentially a bigger deal, but we'll have to just see.
Canada and the UK sold off their gold at bargain basement prices a few years ago. China and Russia have been stocking up in gold. Is this an anticipation of a gold-backed currency?
It potentially is. I mean, they've been buying a lot of gold, and in India's case, a lot of silver. And the question is, why were they doing that? If they were just trying to strengthen their national finances, that's fine. That's a smart thing to do. But if they were intending to bypass the dollar with a gold-backed currency, that's how they would have to start. They would have to accumulate a lot of gold and silver. And they're doing it. So again, we don't know for sure what they're going to announce on the 22nd of August, but they're creating the potential for something like a competing currency backed by commodities that that makes a big difference in the global financial system.
We'll have more with John Rubino right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with John Rubino. John, what are the chances of a silver squeeze sending the price much higher?
There is that chance. You know, there's a shortage of silver out there right now. In other words, the world's mines are not producing enough to satisfy the demand from investors and industrial fabricators, especially solar panel makers. And in situations like that, you can sometimes get a squeeze where the amount of available metal on the exchanges drops to a point where people kind of panic buy. And that sends the price dramatically higher. And you know, we're creating the conditions for that with silver. So no guarantee that it happens, but it is a complete possibility in the year ahead that something like that does happen. So one more reason among the many to own silver.
Which of the miners are doing the best right now?
Well, there are the big ones are doing okay. They're seeing higher costs, but they're managing those costs. And the royalty streaming companies are doing great, as always. That's just an excellent business model. So you definitely want to own them because they don't so much care about near-term production costs or anything. They just get, you know, paid a percentage of a given mine's output, and that's that. So they're doing very well. And there are a handful of junior miners that are putting up really good drill results. And I think from an operational standpoint, that's really important because, it doesn't so much matter what's happening in the overall economy or the overall market. If we need more gold and silver, which we do going forward because the big guys are running through their reserves faster than they're replacing them through exploration, they're going to have to get reserves from somewhere, and they're going to do that by buying the best junior miners with the highest quality resources. And there are some out there. You know, there's five or six juniors that I'm watching right now, or exploration companies, that are finding really dramatically increased reserves out there. They're drilling, and they're hitting a lot of gold and silver when they're drilling. So they're getting bigger in terms of what they got in the ground. And they're getting big enough to move the needle for a major miner. So that means they've become takeover candidates. And I think we'll see that in the coming year, that three or four of the five or six juniors that are putting up good drill results will get bought out at nice premiums. So that'll be a nice kicker no matter what the rest of the market is doing.
This year, it seems that true AI seems to have emerged, and the government's pretty well admitting aliens are for real. Extraordinary coincidence or massive false flag to take our minds off the real economy?
Boy, I don't know. What a coincidence that arguably the two biggest events in human history, you know, meeting an alien race and seeing machines become conscious, are kind of sort of starting now. You know, neither of those has actually happened yet, but artificial intelligence is emerging, and it's, in some cases, sounding conscious. And we haven't actually met aliens yet, but governments are flat out admitting that there are vehicles flying around out there that seem to have capabilities that are beyond anything what we have. So what are the odds of that happening in basically the same stretch of a few years? I don't know. I think it's much easier to believe that that we're being set up for something that's terrestrial, but also very big, and they're softening us up with this stuff. So we'll see. Again, we don't know for sure about any of this, but there are different interpretations of what's happening. None of them are really favorable for humanity, but we will see, I think, in the not-too-distant future, which of the interpretations turns out to be true.
John, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on besides AI and aliens?
Jim, I think we covered it.
I think we did. John, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Great. My pleasure, Jim. Talk to you soon.
My guest has been John Rubino, author of several books on the economy, including The Money Bubble. He founded the website dollarcollapse.com. If you have any questions for John or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.